I'm Andrea Gunning, host of the all-new podcast, There and Gone. It's a real-life story of two people who left a crowded Philadelphia bar, walked to their truck, and vanished.
A truck and two people just don't disappear.
The FBI called it murder for hire. But which victim was the intended target and why? Listen to There and Gone South Street on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Haunting, Purgatory's premier podcast. I'm your host, Teresa.
We'll be bringing you different ghost stories each week, straight from the person who experienced it firsthand. Some will be unsettling, some unnerving, some even downright terrifying. But all of them will be totally true.
Listen to Haunting on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We all know what that music means. It's time for the Olympics in Paris.
I'm Matt Rogers.
And I'm Bowen Yang.
And we're doing an Olympics podcast? Yeah. We're hosting the Two Guys, Five Rings podcast. Watch every moment of the 2024 Paris Olympics beginning July 26th on NBC and Peacock. And for the first time, you can stream the 2024 Paris Games on the iHeartRadio app. And listen to Two Guys, Five Rings on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In February of 1995, on the east side of Cleveland, 16-year-old William Marshall survived an armed robbery. Rumors swirled about a usual suspect named Reggie Lewis. On March 28, 1995, the victim's cousins, Willie and Ashante Smith, ran into Reggie, who denied involvement, offering to go with them to their cousins and clear his name. Over a week later, Reggie Lewis's body was found in a wooded area, and eventually William Marshall blamed Willie and Ashante. But this is wrongful conviction.
Wrongful conviction has always given voice to innocent people in prison, and now we're expanding that voice to you. Call us at 833-207-4666 and tell us how these stories make you feel
and what you've done to help the cause, even if it's something as simple as telling a friend or sharing on social media. And you might just hear yourself in a future episode. Call us, 833-207-4666.
Welcome back to Wrongful Conviction, where we have a Cleveland family that was ripped apart, literally ripped apart by the wrongful conviction of Ashante and Willie Smith. But before we introduce them, I want to welcome back their appellate attorney, Kim Corral.
Thank you for having me.
And of course, the two men who continue to endure the effect of their own cousin's lie, both of whom are calling in from correctional facilities in Ohio. First, the younger of the two, Ashante Smith.
Thank you for having me.
And his older brother, Willie, thank you guys both for joining us.
Absolutely. No problem.
And this goes back to the mid-90s, 1995, when so-called tough-on-crime politicians had been elected around the country to prosecute the war on drugs, which was really just a war on people, the American people, when what we had was a humanitarian crisis, which became known as the crack epidemic.
Not only were we talking about tough on crime politicians in the 90s, but we were talking about like these super criminals, particularly juveniles. And so that kind of sets a tone for this case because Willie and Ashante were 15 and 19. And when I say that Ashante was like, there are 15-year-olds who look like adults and 15-year-olds who look like 10-year-olds, that's how I would describe Ashante at that time. I mean, he was 15, but he was very young.
I was 15 years old when I left, so I didn't experience much life. My mother was a single parent raising four children. My parents were divorced when I was about, I think it was about 4 or 5 years old.
My father, he was kind of an abusive dude. We would be eating at the table and he might come in and just flip the whole goddamn table. You know what I'm saying? Food everywhere. My mother eventually divorced him. We were living on Kinsmen when I stayed across from my grandmother. That's before the divorce. And we were moved down to the projects.
project housing called Longwood Estates. And we eventually got settled on East 131st Street in Southview. It's four of us. I was the third child. My second brother is Rashid, and my sister, Satin.
Hey, well, I'm the oldest of three other siblings. My mother comes from a big family, so she had her sisters, Andretta, Kit, Agatha, and one of her sisters who was murdered, Colette Marshall. Then you had her brother who committed suicide back before I was born.
My understanding is Lucretia, Ashanti and Willie's mom, she basically was the one to find him. And that further solidified her position as like the black sheep in the family. So Lucretia and her sisters all have children, but really her children are other than some of the other cousins. And when one of Lucretia's sisters dies, grandma takes that child in. That's William Marshall.
There was always a different type of treatment towards us being SNCs versus how my other cousins was treated by my grandmother.
But William Marshall really is the golden boy in this group of cousins to grandma.
And our cousins came around. You know, we spent time with them, and we were all relatively in the same age bracket. My one cousin, William, he's 1 year older than me. And then my older cousin, Sean Laney, is a few years older than my brother.
Sean Laney and his mother, Andretta. William Marshall and his grandma, Sarah Marshall. And then Kit Laster, who married Don Laster. They all lived close to each other, while the Smiths lived about 5 miles away, near the victim in this case, Reggie Lewis.
I didn't know him. I had seen him around the neighborhood. He was developing a reputation because at around this time, guys from the neighborhood were robbing people. Stars jackets, Chicago Bulls jackets, Raiders jackets, Jordans. They were robbing and shooting and killing people for him. So Mr. Lewis, he was grappling with drug addiction, which I believe that led him out into the streets to rob people to feed his addiction.
Have you ever seen The Wire?
Yeah.
Not trying to, you know, disparage him, but I would describe Reggie as being like what Omar was. He was a terror. He was on drugs and he was causing havoc, making a lot of enemies and doing a lot.
Then in February 1995, William Marshall was in the Smiths neighborhood when a masked gunman attacked.
I believe it was over like a Looney Tunes jacket.
He got shot in his back, and I think it came out of his neck. And he went through surgery. It was serious. He almost lost his life.
And so a kid gets robbed at gunpoint. No one's trying to figure out who did it or what happened, except for the other members of the family, the sort of cousin group who's trying to protect their own.
The night of William's shooting, Sean, Ronnie Johnson, the friend of Sean Laney, and a few other guys went through my neighborhood. And they jumped out on a few guys and roughhoused a little bit, and they came up with Reggie Lewis' name.
And then, on March 28th, 1995, Willie and Ashanti were driving around with their friends Rasheen Bledsoe and Clarence Brown, and they ran into Reggie in front of their friend Chanel Owens' house.
Chanel Owens comes to the car and basically expresses that another drug addict named Scott LaRocque had just jumped on Reggie, beat him up a little bit, and she was like, I want Reggie Lewis by my yard, and he won't leave. Everybody jumped out the car, but I remember the name. I said, ain't you the one supposed to be? And he says, I didn't shoot nobody. You got me effed up. And we got to fighting. And in the course of us fighting, he basically like, I didn't do it, but I know who did. And blase, blase, you could take me to your cousin. He has seen that I ain't the one that shot him. I don't know why everybody put my name in that shit. I ain't had nothing to do with it. It was somebody else. So I'm like, okay, well, let's go. So we get into the car. He's not being restrained. He's not being pushed into no damn car, none of that. And we roll out.
And Chanel Owens' immediate statement to the police is that he goes willingly with Willie and Ashanti and their two friends. Later, she testifies that they all get into a fight and they kidnap him.
It was during the day, so I'm assuming that William is at school or wherever the hell he's supposed to be, but he's nowhere around. I go to the Banbury Station, Warrensville, to go run down on my cousin Sean. He walks up to the car. He say, that's Reggie. I say, yeah, it's Reggie right here. He say, he didn't have nothing to do with that. Why is y'all putting his name in it? And he basically like, oh, all right, well, we're going to find out then. So he gets in the car and we all go to my uncle's house, Donald Lasser's house, and Kit Marshall's house, down the street from my grandmother's house, Sarah Marshall. So we roll up in there, me, and Ashante and Sean proceeded to my aunt's house. You know, we wasn't going to walk up in there with all these people. She would have had a fit. And soon as we get up in the house, the whole tone changed with Sean. Like, that's the dude who did it. Why did you bring him down? Now he know where our aunt stay. My aunt chimes in. Kit Lasser chimes in at the time. Like, yeah, if he is shoot him, he is shoot us. And you know, I'm just like, hold on, man. The man said he didn't do it. So, you know what I'm saying? I'm not about to do nothing to this dude. So we have words. And he basically said, well, shit, if I would have rolled up on him, he would have already been dead. And I asked him, I said, look, man, go and check it out with William. If he didn't do it, he cool. But if he did, I said, well, I don't want nothing to do with none of that other shit. I'm gone. Sean says, well, I'll take care of it from here, man.
And Mr. Lewis got in the car with Sean Laney and Mr. Johnson in the blue truck. My brother, myself, and our two friends, we left. We didn't see where they went. We didn't even see them leave.
And so that is the end of their engagement with what turns out to be a murder.
You're listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early and ad-free by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts.
Greetings, ghouls and girls, and welcome to Haunting, Purgatory's premier podcast for all things afterlife. I'm your host, Teresa. We'll be bringing you different ghost stories each week, straight from the person who experienced it firsthand. Some will be unsettling.
When she was with her imaginary friend, she would turn and look at you, and you felt like something else was looking at you, too.
Some unnerving.
The more I looked at it, I realized that the thumb looked more like a claw, like a demon.
Some even downright terrifying.
The things that I saw, heard, felt in that house were purely demonic.
But all of them will be totally true. Listen to Haunting on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you live and get your podcasts.
I'm Andrea Gunning, host of the all-new podcast, There and Gone. It's a real-life story of two people who left a crowded Philadelphia bar, walked to their truck, and vanished.
Nobody hears anything. Nobody sees anything.
Did they run away? Was it an accident? Or were they murdered?
A truck and two people just don't disappear.
The FBI called it murder for hire.
It was definitely murder for hire for Danielle, not for Richard.
He's your son, and in your eyes, he's innocent. But in my eyes, he's just some guy my sister was with.
In this series, I dig into my own investigation to find answers for the families and get justice for Richard and Danielle. All that I know. Listen to There and Gone South Street on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We all know what that music means. Is somebody getting coronated? No, it's time for the Olympics in Paris.
The opening ceremony for the 2024 Paris Games is coming on July 26.
Who are these athletes? When are the games they're playing? We may be looking for the sports experts to answer those questions, but we're not that.
Well, what are we? We're two guys. I'm Matt Rogers.
And I'm Bowen Yang.
And we're doing an Olympics podcast? Yeah. We're hosting the Two Guys, Five Rings podcast.
You get the two guys, us, to start every podcast. Then the five rings come after.
Watch every moment of the 2024 Paris Olympics beginning July 26th on NBC and Peacock. And for the first time, you can stream the 2024 Paris Games on the iHeartRadio app. And listen to Two Guys, Five Rings on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
March 28th, my grandmother, my brother and I did see her at a hardware store around 3:30, 4 o'clock that evening with our two friends, the same two friends in the same white car we've been driving in all day.
Factually, she saw them on the other side of town before she goes home.
which corroborated Willie and Ashanti's version of events. They saw their grandmother shortly after leaving Reggie Lewis with their cousins. Meanwhile, as that day turned into the next, Reggie's mother began to wonder where her son was.
His mother said at trial that she didn't hear from him, and she called down to the police department and filed a mystery police report, and then she said a few days later, the body was recovered.
It's April 8th, 1995. A kindergarten class is walking through a public park in Warrensville, which is about 20 minutes from where the crime occurred. And in the ravine, they find a pretty decomposed human body, kindergartners. And so this gets a ton of attention. So once they're able to identify that it's Reggie Lewis, they start like a backwards investigation of like, who doesn't like Reggie Lewis? And they become aware that he's in a fight in Chanel Owens' yard. And when they first talk to Chanel Owens, she says, yes, he was in a fight in my yard with this person. And then he was in a fight in my yard with Willie and Ashanti Smith and their two friends. And he got in the car with them and they drove off.
On April 19th, 1995, despite Chanel's initial statement that Reggie had gotten into the car willingly, both Willie and Ashanti were arrested for kidnapping. And Ashanti had an additional assault charge tacked on.
They kicked the door in about 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning. SWAT team ran in the house with masks on, machine guns. It was terrifying. And so me and my brother were arrested for questions. And I was 15 years old at the time, but they questioned me anyway before my mother even got there. But I didn't have nothing to offer other than the fact that we got in a fight and we dropped the guy off. And that was the truth.
I walked through the door of the interrogation room. Detective Spira says flat out, we know you didn't kill him. We know you just dropped him off. The first one to talk is the one to get the deal. So what are you saying? If I don't talk, you're going to put a case on me?
We didn't completely come out and say who we dropped him off to. That's true. We didn't do that. And maybe we should have said we saw Mr. Lewis leave with our cousin and his friend and he came up missing and dead. You know, 1 + 2 equals what it does, right?
I told them, I said, well, shit, it seems like you already know everything. So if you know I dropped him off, then you know he was alive and well, then what am I here for? You talking to the wrong dude. And they was like, well, that's not like how this works. And my mother and my grandfather on my father's side of the family happened to come in and sit down and she seen where it was going and told me not to say another word. And I have not said another word until this interview today.
Now they do a search. In Ashanti's room, they find a gun, but it doesn't match the bullets that shot Reggie.
At that time, me and Ashanti are only charged with kidnapping, and Ashanti has an additional charge of assault.
But I was a juvenile in a county jail. They had me amongst the adults for 8 months until they found out I was a juvenile. I had a cellmate who was about like 28 years old.
William Marshall has not been involved or picked up or charged yet.
An alleged anonymous tip led Detective Spera to William Marshall.
Whoever made the tip said that they witnessed the murder in the basement of William's home that he lived with my grandmother. And he identified Sean Laney, William Marshall, and my uncles. This would lead them to execute the warrant at the home.
They search William Marshall's house and find blood, bullets. I mean, the house has been cleaned, but there's still remnants of blood all over the basement, all over.
A 9mm bullet was collected, and the serology came back consistent with Reggie Lewis's blood, leading to William Marshall's arrest, as well as a renewed offer to Ashanti and Willie.
Detective Sparrow has told me, he even told my mother, that he knew that me and my brother did not commit this crime. He said he knew that we were not there, but he told me he could not help us if we could not help him. He implied to me that if I put myself there and say I saw what happened, he could help me and my brother. But neither I nor my brother was willing to put ourselves in that basement and say that we saw something that we didn't see. William was willing to do it.
And they basically tell William Marshall, they think it had to have been Willie and Ashanti, and they tell William Marshall, you're going to get raped in prison. Your asshole will be the size of a grapefruit. We cannot protect you in adult prison. If you agree to this one-year deal in the juvenile detention center and testify against your cousins, you can be done with this. And there's like the family dynamic here. Grandma wants to protect William Marshall, who she is raising. Meanwhile, we sort of have Black Sheep Lucretia's two sons, and his grandma tells him take the deal.
Donald Laster and Sarah Marshall were having visits with him, and were not having visits with Ashanti. And they were prepping him on what to say and what not to say. And they were getting ready to put the screws and fuck us all the way around.
And the statement was carefully crafted to kind of make William into a passive observer. That Willie and Ashanti dragged Reggie Lewis into their grandma's basement, ordered William to find some twine. William then gave them phone cord and then went upstairs to be a lookout. They tied Reggie up, shot him, ordered William to get some sheets to wrap the body. And then Willie and Ashanti dragged the body out to the trunk of a car, and William cleaned up the basement.
That day, I had never, ever saw William Marshall. William Marshall never saw me. The only person that saw me that day was Sean Laney, Ronnie Johnson, Kit Laster, and my grandmother, Sarah Marshall, who saw us four when she was coming out of the hardware store, which inadvertently solidified my alibi, I feel, because if you saw us with these two guys and my aunt saw us at her house with these two guys that was with us when we dropped this man off alive and well, why am I going to trial?
Willie is tried first, and that's largely because Willie's an adult, and Ashanti first had to go through the bind-over program. He had to be bound over from juvenile court to adult court. William Marshall, because he takes this deal, never gets bound over. He gets a one-year sentence for his role in a murder, and then he's done. But unfortunately for Willie, he didn't have much of a defense.
Oh, no. The streets and the other suspects was guaranteeing that I was convicted for this crime by making sure that nobody, no witnesses came up at my trial. I was naive to believe that if you got a subpoena, ain't no not coming to court. Oh, excuse me, shit, because I sent subpoenas out to Kit Laster, Rasheen Bledsoe, Clarence Brown. In my mind, it was time to list every voice and sing, and, you know, nobody showed up.
Without an alibi, William Marshall's statement went unchallenged. Rather, it was supported by Chanel Owens, who had changed her story to say that Reggie had not gone with the Smiths willingly. So Willie was convicted in September 1995.
You got to put yourself at the time when all this is going on, too. So it was a little bit of hostility going on because of the OJ situation, you know, and his verdict that had just transpired 3 days prior to my verdict. You got, you know, COs, deputy sheriffs making comments, even got the judge chiming in about that. Basically, everybody felt like he got away with something. So I'm hearing, you know, well, this one won't. And, you know, when the jury came back and said that I was guilty of kidnapping, I knew that it was a lie. When they said I was not guilty of the first count of aggravated murder, I was relieved. And then when they went to the third count of aggravated murder and said I was not guilty of prior calculation and design, not guilty of the gun specification, and not guilty of being the principal offender, I was like, whoa, hold on, that's a lot of not guilties. And then they turned around and went to having a weapon under disability charge and found me not guilty of that as well. And an argument ensued with my attorneys, with the judge. They was like, hold on. The state's theory was that this guy was executed by this guy. And the jury just said that he didn't have a gun. He's not the main guy. That I did not commit this crime with prior calculation and design, but yet I ended up with a 30-to-life sentence. I ended up going to jail for a crime that I didn't commit and that basically a jury of my peers took the gun out of my hand that William Marshall was so willing to put in my hand.
It sounds like there was a conflict among jurors who reached a compromise. But hell of a compromise it was. The result was still 30 to life. And then Ashanti went to trial the following spring of 1996.
I was petrified. I'm going to be honest with you. I was going to lie and try to take a deal. I was thinking about doing it just to save myself because people do this every single day in this system just to save themselves. This is how cruel this system is. But I went to trial for my brother so that the truth could get out there because I was thinking, I was under this illusion that if you told the truth, that it'd stand.
By the time Ashanti went to trial, his family and other alibi witnesses were now willing to testify.
Maybe they thought Willie would be fine because he didn't do it and they didn't need to put themselves out there. And so they didn't show up for him. But then when Willie was convicted, they were like, oh, this is our come to Jesus moment. We need to show up for Ashanti. I don't know what happened, but could be attributable to like more time went by and the family had some time to process what was happening. But by the time Ashanti goes to trial, he has Uncle Don, Kit, he has all of these people coming in to testify that Ashanti and Willie were with Reggie Lewis, but that they left.
We have both of our friends was with us the entire time. They testified to this at my trial. They testified that they witnessed Mr. Lewis get out of the white car and get into the blue truck with our cousin and his friend. I'm thinking to myself that, okay, if the truth is here, they have to see it now, I'm going to be found not guilty. And I'm thinking that it would have some positive ramification for my brother as well, too. No, the opposite happened. The prosecutor played it as if our two friends, this was figment of our imagination, despite the fact that six additional witnesses is saying the same thing. That testified at the trial.
And Grandma, trying to play the middle ground, she did. Factually, she saw them on the other side of town before she goes home. She testifies she sees them on the other side of town, so it couldn't have been them. But the state comes in with their star witness, William Marshall, who has been given the sweetheart deal of a lifetime.
Yeah, he gets up on the stand and he tells a story that makes absolutely no sense.
William Marshall testifies that he and Willie and Ashanti brought Reggie Lewis over to his grandma's house, took him into the basement, tied him up, shot him, killed him, and then took his body to Warrensville. Now, how that all was feasible, how it all went down, there's a thousand gaps and holes in his testimony.
There is no physical evidence that links me and my brother to that basement or to the victims. Don't forget the victim's clothes and the victim's body, no hair fiber, no fingerprints, nothing.
But it was just treated as true. Willie and Ashanti were convicted, and it's essentially been 30 years.
The jury come back in, and they say guilty on all charges. And I heard my mother and I heard my sister behind me, and they were sobbing. I heard because my mother kept saying, it's not fair. It's not fair. It's just not fair. And then I had an epiphany when I knew that my life wasn't valued. I knew that the system did not care at all. I knew the truth was not necessary in bringing about a conviction. Who did it? It didn't matter.
Greetings, ghouls and girls, and welcome to Haunting, Purgatory's premier podcast for all things afterlife. I'm your host, Teresa. We'll be bringing you different ghost stories each week, straight from the person who experienced it firsthand. Some will be unsettling.
When she was with her imaginary friend, she would turn and look at you, and you felt like something else was looking at you, too.
Some unnerving.
The more I looked at it, I realized that the thumb looked more like a claw, like a demon.
Some even downright terrifying.
The things that I saw, heard, felt in that house were purely demonic.
But all of them will be totally true. Listen to Haunting on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you live and get your podcasts.
I'm Andrea Gunning, host of the all-new podcast, There and Gone. It's a real-life story of two people who left a crowded Philadelphia bar, walked to their truck, and vanished.
Nobody hears anything. Nobody sees anything.
Did they run away? Was it an accident? Or were they murdered?
A truck and two people just don't disappear.
The FBI called it murder for hire.
It was definitely murder for hire for Danielle, not for Richard.
He's your son, and in your eyes, he's innocent. But in my eyes, he's just some guy my sister was with.
In this series, I dig into my own investigation to find answers for the families and get justice for Richard and Danielle.
All that I know.
Listen to There and Gone South Street on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We all know what that music means. Is somebody getting coronated? No, it's time for the Olympics in Paris.
The opening ceremony for the 2024 Paris Games is coming on July 26.
Who are these athletes? When are the games they're playing? We may be looking for the sports experts to answer those questions, but we're not that.
Well, what are we? We're two guys. I'm Matt Rogers.
And I'm Bowen Yang.
And we're doing an Olympics podcast? Yeah. We're hosting the Two Guys, Five Rings podcast.
You get the two guys, us, to start every podcast. Then the five rings come after.
Watch every moment of the 2024 Paris Olympics beginning July 26th on NBC and Peacock. And for the first time, you can stream the 2024 Paris Games on the iHeartRadio app. And listen to Two Guys, Five Rings on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm sitting in Lorraine Correctional Institution, which is reception when you come to prison. I'm waiting to be classed to see what prison I'm going to go to. And they, you know, they woke me up in the middle of the night and told me I was going to SOCF. And I seen all the older guys stick their hair from under the covers because they knew where that was at the time. That's Lucasville. So I'm going maximum security. And, you know, you got to do what you got to do to survive. You know, my brother, he had to go to Madison because I think that was where they was housing the juveniles at the time. I stayed in Madison until I was 18 years old, and then they sent me to Lucasville. I guess after they gave him enough milk, it was time to send him to the big house, too.
I went to a place that was petrifying, sir. I'm talking about I went to a place that looked like it was just one of those old penitentiary movies you saw on TV. With the bars and the towers and the mean face guards and the, you know, with the billy clubs in the hand and, you know, don't talk and don't say nothing. You just keep your eyes forward and they speak, you don't speak. Yeah, that's what was my first initial experience.
We saw each other and I'm so proud of my brother because I saw a lot of guys his age come in and be destroyed, you know, basically lose their mind. And my brother, you know, he educated himself and he basically became the man that he is today. And, you know, I mean, in a situation like this, I hate to be in it with anybody, but if I had to go through it, I'd rather go through it with one of the strongest people I know.
Pashante has even written a book.
Well, the book is called A Life Betrayed, and it's about me and my brother. And it chronicles my childhood and my early experiences in the home, and just growing up in the neighborhood and going to school, my struggles in school, and my discoveries about myself as far as this case went forward, then how I went to prison. I taught myself how to read and taught myself how to write and began to read books. I became a voracious reader and began to write and study, found my voice, and that's what the book is about. And I've been trying to refine it a little bit and get it together in a manuscript form so I can get it out here to the public.
If anyone would like to help in that process, we're going to have ways to reach Ashante linked in the episode description. And, you know, there's even more to their story that we have time to cover while getting the word out about their innocence, which, of course, they've been fighting to do that ever since their initial appeals about the insufficiency of the evidence, which is almost impossibly high bar after a jury's verdict, and they were denied. Then Willie had the opportunity to get the alibi witnesses available to Ashante on the record, but it appears Kit Laster had even more to say.
I was calling home, and my mother was confiding in me that her sister, Kit Laster, was having nightmares and could not get a good night's sleep, knowing everything that had just happened. It destroyed the family, any trust or any love for each other, but she did have a conscience where a lot of people did not have a conscience in the situation. And it was to the point where she kept calling my mother and she's like, I got to do something. This shit ain't right. And my mother was basically like, well, write an affidavit. Do, you know, come forward. Tell them what you know. And she did. And she even convinced her husband to come forward.
So in 1999, Willie files a post-conviction. He got a hearing on it.
My evidentiary hearing that happened in January 3rd of 2000, affidavits were presented from Rasheen and Clarence, basically attesting that they was threatened. And, you know, that's why they didn't come to court. They came down there and admitted who threatened them. Kit Laster testified to the fact that the night of the murder, that her husband, Don Laster, had confided in her and told her that Reginald Lewis was in fact dead when they hadn't found the body until April.
In open court, you have testimony of witness tampering and that Don Laster knew about Reggie's death before the body was discovered.
It's kind of like, in that situation, it's like a fart. Once you throw it in the room, you can't act like you don't smell it.
And then it was denied. The quick summary of it is, it wasn't enough to change the outcome of Ashanti's case when it was available to him, so you can't show here that it would be enough to change the outcome of your case.
Even though that evidence far exceeded what was available to Ashanti at trial. And then, unfortunately and unsurprisingly, that hearing was the last positive thing to happen in this story for quite some time. After 21 years, Willie was flopped at the parole board for another 8 long years, and then Kim signed on to help Ashanti with his parole.
So in 2018, Ashanti started to reach out to me to do a parole packet for him, and he is a profoundly impressive person. He went into the system at age 15. He could barely read and write, but now he's written for the Call and Post, for the Plain Dealer. He has developed and initiated and promoted and produced programs within the prison system. If there were a person who exhibited, and arguably he didn't need rehabilitation because he was innocent of this crime, but who has exhibited the rehabilitative function of prison, it would be Ashanti. I didn't even lead with they're innocent because the parole board never wants to hear that. I talked about they deny involvement and there's the lack of evidentiary support of their involvement, but they do take responsibility for what role he did play in terms of the fight and thinking there's zero chance this man is not getting parole. And then they were basically like, well, you admitted to beating up and kidnapping that man, and now you're denying that you did this.
Even though they never admitted to kidnapping.
They think, the state's theory is the kidnapping happens on Chanel Owens' lawn.
Even though their statements and Chanel Owens' initial statement all said that Reggie Lewis went with them willingly, anyway, parole denied.
But by then, I had sunken my teeth into the case, and I couldn't let it go. It took some time to really develop family relationships, get to understand how this all works together. And William Marshall eventually came forward.
Sean's mother died. And that's when William had saw my mother for the first time since the trials and broke down and started crying and sobbing and what have you. After that, I guess he probably couldn't sleep. And that's when he came forward.
William Marshall wrote an affidavit telling us the truth that he had always known Ashanti and Willie weren't involved, that they didn't come with him back to his grandmother's house with Reggie Lewis, and that he had been bullied and pressured into saying it was them because basically the police were like, you will be gang raped every day. Best of luck to you. We're not going to protect you from that. They used the term, your asshole will be as big as a grapefruit. And this was something that as a child, he was terrified of. Then he had family members coming and saying, like his grandmother, you need to take that deal to protect yourself. He lied against Ashanti and Willie, which I think is obvious without him admitting it. But now with him admitting it, that's the new evidence you need to go forward.
He added that it was Uncle Don's brother, Al, who ultimately shot Reggie Lewis. It's not lost on us that he was lying back then. And what would stop him from lying again now? The point is, he never was credible. But there's one big difference. This time, his word was corroborated by everyone else.
And so we filed that. I filed it for Ashanti, and the state came back, and there were a couple of defenses, all of them equally preposterous. Well, this affidavit is not believable, one, because it's possible William Marshall is involved in the murder. Therefore, he's not credible. He was credible when he was being bought with his life, which is nowhere in their whole response. They say Willie and Ashanti are responsible for the murder, which to me is the point. We should just win on that. If the state is not confident writing that down, then they know what we know, which is that they're innocent. Number two, they said this affidavit's not believable because there's another defendant in this case, Willie Smith, and he didn't file this affidavit, which means it's not believable. I respond and say, Willie Smith doesn't have counsel. I will happily represent him. I send a letter to Willie Smith saying, do you mind if I represent you in your innocence claim? Of course, he's no, I do not mind. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And we start to represent him. And then the state suddenly is, you have a conflict. You can't represent both of these people. And called us in. Like literally this prosecutor like gets in my face about this conflict. And I'm like, it's not your conflict to raise. You don't have standing to raise it. I don't know why we're here in court. I don't know what your point is, but you don't have standing to raise it. Willie can raise it. Ashanti can raise it. But they didn't. They waived it. And here we are. And so both of them were denied without a reason, just flat out denied by the court. And we took it to the Court of Appeals and won that appeal. We were all doing quite literally a happy dance in our office when we got to call them both. The state filed for reconsideration. Those were dismissed. And now we're looking forward to having our day in court and bringing these guys home.
The state still needs to exhaust all of their appeals in order to have a hearing in which the state's only evidence is no longer available.
How these prosecutors could literally read a case where the only evidence is now being recanted and say it doesn't even warrant a two-hour hearing?
Right, unless they persist in continuing to disingenuously posit that these men admitted to kidnapping Reggie Lewis on Chanel Owens's lawn, which they simply did not do. So with that, we're going to go to closing arguments where, first of all, I'm just going to tell you guys, I appreciate you so much for sharing this story. I know it's not easy, and we're all just hoping for justice in this case. And now I'm going to turn my microphone off and kick back in my chair and just listen. Anything else you want to say? Kim, let's kick it off with you, and then Ashanti and Willie, if you could take us off into the sunset.
My final thoughts on the matter are that we're getting our day in court finally. We would love to fill the courtroom with support. Hit me up on my Instagram at KimLawKrimLaw if you have any information about this, if you want to show support in some way. But it's important that we engage the community so that we can let these elected officials know that we both are entitled to and expect that justice and due process be served.
I have to say that this has been taxing, sir. Never in my wildest imagination would I ever thought I would be in a situation like this. And also to have my relatives to be the people that will be conspiring against us. And, it's heart-wrenching. Truly it was. And it is. And I'm telling you, being here thrown away since I was 15 years old in this place, this experience has tried to strip me of everything sacred, which is my humanity, which is my decency, which is my self-respect. And I watch every day people lose that. I watch men lose themselves every single day. And I've been fighting and resisting it. And I'm tired, and my brother's tired, and my mother's tired. And it's time for justice. It's time for truth and justice. That's what we're fighting for. That's what we're striving for, the truth and justice. I will pray and hope that anyone that is decent and kind and that wants to live in a society that's just and equitable and fair who want to participate in this process to help me and my brother reclaim our freedom, because it is just our right. We should never lost it to begin with. And that's all I have to say for today.
Well, I guess I'm going to quote Dr. King. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. This huge injustice is taking place in this case between me and my brother. And you know, I know it's covered in shit, but somebody got to be brave enough to work the shovel. And I'll leave you with that.
Thank you for listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts. I want to thank our production team, Connor Hall and Kathleen Fink, as well as my fellow executive producers, Jeff Kempler, Kevin Wardis, and Jeff Clyburn. The music in this production was supplied by 3-time Oscar-nominated composer, Jay Ralph. Be sure to follow us across all social media platforms at Lava for Good and at Wrongful Conviction. You can also follow me on Instagram at It's Jason Flom. Wrongful Conviction is a production of Lava for Good Podcasts in association with Signal Company No. 1.
I'm Andrea Gunning, host of the all-new podcast, There and Gone. It's a real-life story of two people who left a crowded Philadelphia bar, walked to their truck, and vanished.
A truck and two people just don't disappear.
The FBI called it murder for hire. But which victim was the intended target and why? Listen to There and Gone, South Street,
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Haunting, Purgatory's premier podcast. I'm your host, Teresa. We'll be bringing you different ghost stories each week straight from the person who experienced it firsthand. Some will be unsettling, some unnerving, some even downright terrifying. But all of them will be totally true. Listen to Haunting on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We all know what that music means. It's time for the Olympics in Paris.
I'm Matt Rogers.
And I'm Bowen Yang.
And we're doing an Olympics podcast? Yeah. We're hosting the Two Guys, Five Rings podcast.
Watch every moment of the 2024 Paris Olympics beginning July 26th on NBC and Peacock. And for the first time, you can stream the 2024 Paris Games on the iHeartRadio app. And listen to Two Guys, Five Rings on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.